Okay, so we'll start with just a few small comments on the issues that come up here. So the Mishnah, as we again on Yodal and Bet, had listed things that we do send, right? Mishalchem Kalim Ben Tfurin Ben Shein and Tfurin Ve'apal Pesha Yesh Ben Kilayim. You can send clothes even if they are Kilayim, as long as they're for Yom Tov. But then the Gemara says, Velo Sandal Hamasumar, Velo Minal Sheno Tafer, but not a this shoe with a nail in it. And not a shoe which hasn't yet been stitched up. So the Gemara, right? So just a little bit on this shoe with a nail. So the Gemara says of a low sandal hamasumar. Right now we're on Tesvav and Aleph, but you can't send this shoe. So the Gemara says sandal hamasumar my time low. Why can't you send this shoe with the nail in it? So it says, right, this nail would, keep it together and also, give it grasp. But it's like the cowboy boots, right? They have, what is that called? On the bottom that would, help it stick into the ground. The spurs. Yeah, so it's like a particularly sharp spur. So why can't you? So the Gemara said, Mishum Ma'asa Shahaya. So there was because there's a rabbinic decree against it based on a case where someone, actually wore these shoes and hurt somebody. So Chazal forbade people wearing these particularly sharp shoes, and since you aren't allowed to wear it, even though you're not allowed to wear it midirabanan, so it doesn't have a use on Yom Tov, so you're not allowed to send it on Yom Tov. And Amrabai is sandal hamasumar asur nehalo. This shoe, you aren't allowed to wear it umuter lataltlo, but you are allowed to move it, right? Meaning it's not muktza. You can't put it on as a shoe. Mishum Ma'asashaya, because of this time when people put it in and injured people. Umutr l'taltlo, but you are allowed to move it. And how does he know? Midiktani, because our Mishnah says that ain mishalchan, that you don't send it on Yom Tov. Diyisakadaitach asr l'taltlo. If, because of the prohibition to wear it, it was so off limits that it was mukta, that you couldn't even move it, so it would have said, don't move it. It wouldn't say, don't send it, because sending it implies you could use it in your house, but you can't send it, so it must be that it's mutter to move. Because if it were, in fact, forbidden to move, then why would you even bother telling me that it's aser, that it's forbidden to send? Okay, so we have this shoe with the spur, which the Gemara makes 2 points. One is that it doesn't have a use on Yom Tov, so you aren't allowed to send it, but it's not totally useless, so it's not muktzah, right? The normal rule, right, what makes something muktzah, right? So there's several different types of muktzah. One of them is, right, what different things make things muktzah, right? So there are things which have no use.
Makshava
before.
Use.
Right, so either, right, there, so some muktzahs are usur because they are intended for usur, for uses, right? Muktzah, machmas, malacha. Then there are things which, right, chisaron kis, right, things that are valuable, so you don't really want to use, right, like a moel's knife or important papers, like a passport and the like. And then there's just the most basic case of muktzah, which is things that have no use. So the Gemara asserts that it's not that, right? It's not considered to have no use, even though you can't wear it. So just a few comments on this, right? It's pretty straightforward.
Is this the same story with Rabbi Akiva? Like, is it the same accident that happened?
It's one story in all of Shas. This, right? Ma'aseh Shaya was this apparently very famous story, right? Rashi, I think, even quotes it. Here, he just tells you where it is, right? It's just this story that everybody knew of the time the person was damaged with this shoe. Okay, so just three short comments, and they're all the Shittim Gumbetzet quotes all of them. So the first is from the Radbaz. Amumutr l'taltlo. So Rashi had said, Perish Rashi, the klihu, that the reason it's not muktzah is because it's considered a piece of clothing, right? It's a vessel. Adkan. So he just says, what does that mean? Why is that relevant? So perish, lufi de taras kli alav. Since it is defined as a piece of clothing, right? It's a forbidden piece of clothing, but it is a piece of clothing, it is a vessel. The af al gav de hevi leki kli shemalachta lis or me'achar sheinu mutter lishtamish bo. And even though at some level it's sort of like a kli, which is malachta lisr, because it's prohibited, right? He's using that very loosely. Normally malachta lisr means it's usr only on Shabbos. This is asur always to wear. So he's using it loosely. Still, Mameshu Miyuchad Dahinu Linalo, you aren't allowed to use it for its normal use, which would be as a shoe. So the first point is just to note that he just read, just to clarify why this is the case. He says, why is it that it's not mukta? Because classic mukta has to have no use, right? There are two types of mukta. There's the classic mukta which has no use, and that type of mukta can be solved if you need it for its place. Right, letzorach makoma, or letzorach gufa, or you have some other use for it. Then there's the higher level of mukta, which is machmas malacha, right? That it's normally used for an asr malacha. So that doesn't have these leniencies of tzorach gufa, letzorach makoma. So he says that what's clear from our Gemara and what Rashi is highlighting by saying it is a kli. Is that it is not a kli shemalachto le'isur, so it doesn't have the higher standards. Right? Since the Gemara says you're allowed to move it, it must be that you can move it whenever you need to move it. You can't use it, but you can move it. Right? So that's what he assumes Rashi was saying. So just point one is, right, the Gemara says clearly it's not mukta. And he says, why is it not mukta? Because it doesn't lose its status as a kli, right? And it's not actually us, it's just we don't want you to wear it. So if you find any other use for it, so then, like any normal case of mukta, which is just useless, the second it becomes useful, it's mutter to move. Okay?
Is this a gzera al gzera? In other words, mukta in itself is a gzera, and the shoe with the nail is a gzera, and therefore, since it is a kli, we hold it's not, it's allowed to be moved.
So it's not.
Is that the intent here?
It's not exactly a gzera al gzera. It's, right, it's. I might have thought that the prohibition to wear it Darabanan makes it useless, totally useless, right? But we say, no, it doesn't make it totally useless, it just makes it partially useless, right? So it's not, right, Xero Xero is adding two levels of Isser, this is mitigating the Isser, right? I might have thought it went that far, we pull back. We say, you can't wear it, but we're not going to go as far as to say that it's totally useless. Now we're going to pull back a little bit.
Yeah, but he can wear it in his house, right?
Maybe wear it in his house or use it for, to
bang. So it has a use.
Right, or use it to, I don't know, bang something into the wall. I can't quite picture the shoe, but, so that's just small point number one.
It's not like cleats.
What?
Cleats.
I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know why one would wear a shoe with a nail in it, but I assume it's to give, like, some sort of grip. I'm not 100% sure.
I thought it was like what Gerard's saying.
A cleat?
I mean, if it's based on the
and
story...
And what exactly is a cleat?
Well, the story, as I remember it, is it's like cleats, and when they came into the cave, it made so much noise that they thought the Romans were coming, and they started panicking.
Right. And cleats have, like, sharp things, and that's what they are? Okay. So then, yes, it's something like that.
Baseball or football, they use cleats, right?
Golf used to.
Gives you a grip.
Okay. Yeah. So I assume it's something along those lines. Okay. So small point number two, and this is from the Rajba. Because of a Rajba zal dein mishalchen dekatani haynel tzarach gufo shechaver sameach v'nen abidavar. Shim ein ataomer came pshita dasol shalchol shari afilo taltlo aser shelo tzarach gufo tzarach makoma. So Rajba builds on this and he says, okay. So if we assume that this is some sort of mukta, right, but it can be moved if you need its space. Or you need it, so it still doesn't explain why you would send it. Right? That explains why you could move it, but what we really need to explain in our Gemara is, why would I send it to you? Right? I'm allowed to move it in my house if it's taking up a corner that I need, but what would possibly motivate me to send it to somebody else if they're not allowed to wear it? Right? I still need a justification, right? Meaning, if we assume it's the basic level of mukta, right, so I'm allowed to move it in my house if I have a use for it. But if I'm sending it to somebody else, that presupposes that there's a usefulness in sending it to him. Right? Yes?
Makes sense.
Right? So what use would he get out of it? So the Rajba just says, he's happy that you're giving him a present, and that's enough, right? The fact that he's going to be happy that I'm sending to him is enough of a use to consider this, Litzarach Gufo, Litzarach Mokomo, that there is some use coming from this shoe. Right, so this really builds on the first point. Right, he gets, you know.
What is the nah, nah? I mean, he's getting some value out of
it. He's going to get some benefit. Either, you know, he'll use it for, you know, in the house, or he'll nail something into the wall, or whatever it is he's going to do. But the fact that you're giving him a present, right, that makes him happy. And that you know, the fact that you're making him happy gives it enough of a use that you're allowed to move it to him. So,
those
right,
these two reasons, right?
Well,
aren't they two reasons? The Kaveri Sameach and then the Nana Bidavar.
So I'm not sure if the vi is two reasons or it's he's happy because he gets benefit, right? Sometimes vi is sometimes it's and sometimes it's it's an explanation of. So it could be either. It's either he's happy and he gets benefit or he's happy because he gets benefit. I'm not totally sure, but again, point one and two build on each other, right? The first question is why do you have to teach it's a kli? To say that even though it's usur, it still maintains its definition as a vessel, and therefore it, under certain circumstances, if you need it, you can move it. And the second point is, well, then what use is there in sending it to somebody else? So the Rajba assumes that he's going to enjoy it, and that's enough of a use. That's point two. Point three is from the Radbaz. He says, Umori harav neiru, right? Just in general, neiru stands for natre rachmana uparke, right? God should protect him and redeem him. I don't know, this seems to have fallen out of use, but it was very popular in the medieval period.
Who's
this Rebbe? The Radbaz is...
His Rebbe was pretty fairly late, right?
The Radbaz, I'm not sure who he's referring to. He's like same time as the Arizal, but I don't remember who his Rebbe was.
A little bit later.
I have to look it up. So Mori Harav Neiru Hiksha De Im Kain Lisni Nami Shein Mishalchan Kalim Shemalachdan Li Isur. So right, if we're now saying that the reason that this is permitted to send is because it's only lower level muksa and not the higher level muksa. So why doesn't the Mishnah come out and tell us that you can't send the higher level muksa? Because as we just said, the reason you're allowed to send this one is because it's the lower level mukta, so you could move it if you needed it for its space or found some other use for it. But higher level mukta, right, if it's malach to lizer, you couldn't do that. So why doesn't the Mishnah spell that out? Vim Kain, listening Nami Hanach Shain Mishalchan Osan, and tell us, why doesn't it tell us what you can't sin? The Aval Pisha Mutaran Latal Tlam, and Zerakuf and Zerak Mokoman. So the Teretz Neiru, so he answered, the Sandal Istrichle, there's a novelty in teaching this one, Kosal Kadaikdach Amina, came into Malachto Leheter. Right, so this is coming back to your point, is how does the fact that it was only prohibited to Rabbanan relate to it? So that's what he gets into, and he says, you might have thought that since the prohibition to begin with is only rabbinic, and they only forbade it because of that story, I might have thought, look, it's not really muktzah, because at a fundamental level, on a biblical level, it's permitted. It's only prohibited because of some weird story that happened rabbinically. So I might have thought that's not enough to make something mukta, kamash malan, that no, mukta means it doesn't have a use. It doesn't matter whether it doesn't have a use because I don't normally use it, or there's a rabbinic prohibition. Mukta is defined as that which doesn't have a use. And the second you've created a situation in which its usage is mitigated, whether through practicality or through rabbinic decree, it becomes mukta. And if it was forbidden to even move it when you needed space, you wouldn't have to teach that you can't send a yomtov. So we have three points that build on each other. So the first one is, right, why is it only lower level mukta? Because it retains a status as a vessel. And therefore it's only, right, therefore if it has a use, so then you're allowed to move it. Rajba then adds, okay, but then what use is there when I'm sending it to my friend? And he answers that since he's going to be happy that he's getting it because he can use it for whatever he can use it for, so that joy is enough to already justify me sending it to him. And then the Radbaz asked, okay, but if really the principle at play is that only lower level muksa is mutter to send and not higher level muksa, then why didn't you say that? So he says, no, the Mishnah wasn't trying to teach you all the gradations. What it was teaching you was specifically the sandal you might have thought isn't even lower level muksa, because it's fundamentally useful. It's only rabbinic decree that made it useless. The novelty of the Mishnah is that muksa is defined by whether or not something is useful, and it doesn't matter what made it useless. If it, you know, it doesn't matter if that's because it's a rock and it doesn't have any fundamental use, or it has a rabbinic decree making it useless. It doesn't matter. In the end, all we care about is it or is it not useful? And since the rabbinic decree makes it much less useful, it goes into lower level muksa, right? So those are just three points that just sharpen exactly the issue here in terms of the muksa of sandal hamasumar. Okay? Is it a little bit complicated? Are we clear on this little unit? Okay. One more brief thought, and this is on the next Gemara. So the next Gemara is, so the immediately next Gemara, I didn't even have comments on, is lo minol sheino tafur, not a shoe which is not woven, is not stitched. Pshita, isn't that obvious? So he says, lo nitzercha de'af agav de'nokat besichei. The chiddush, right, the novelty, is that even though, and you know, look at Rashi, if I can find Rashi.
It says besichei.
Right, and where is that?
It's after Masa Shalai.
Besichei. You see, there's k'tana shel eitz. Right, even if it's teaching you that any shoe which isn't stitched is not useful, even if it's attached and it is assembled in some way, right? You could make a shoe that isn't stitched. You instead put like little wooden pegs to keep it together and some sort of like very blocky wood, you know, low quality shoe. So all the Gemara is teaching you is that no, in order for a shoe to be useful, to be sent on Yom Tov, it needs to be a fully stitched shoe, even if it's, you know, at some level a shoe, because you pegged it together, that's not enough. It has to be a real shoe. Okay, so that's just that's that one. The next one, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Aflo Min Alavan. Rabbi Yehuda had said you can't send a white shoe. So the Gemara continues, Tanya, the Braisa says that Rabbi Yehuda Matir B'Shachor. Rabbi Yehuda said that you can send a black shoe, V'Oser B'Lavan, but you can't, but forbade a white shoe. Mibnei Shetzarach Bitzes Hagir. Because the white shoe still needs to be processed, right? They put this little Rashi says right gir min karka hamashkir. It was right. They still needed to blacken it, right? The white shoe they didn't leave purely white. They put some sort of I guess protective layer on top of it. And since a white shoe is not finished, so it's not useful. Rabbi Yossi Osher v'Shachar. Rabbi Yossi forbade black shoes, mibnei shetzarach letzachtecho, because you still need to scrub it, you need to shine it. V'lo pligi, but they're not arguing. Mar ki asrei, umar ki asrei. Each of them is just relating to the realia in their own city. Ba'asrei demar, bisra letachas, ba'asrei demar, bisra le'el. In Rabbi Yehuda's, right, so the Gemara says, what does white mean? White means that the lighter part of the leather is on top. And dark means the darker part of the leather is on top. So in one place, they made shoes by putting the light part of leather on top. So what he meant was, right, if the white lighter part of leather is on top and you see that, then that's not finished. In the other place, they put it the other way, right? So if you saw the dark part of the leather, it meant it wasn't finished, right? They were each just relating to their place, but they were making the same point, which is a shoe which is not yet finished is forbidden, a shoe which is finished is permitted to send because it is already useful. It just happens to be that where they live, they made shoes differently. So each of them described to you what it meant for a shoe to be useful or useless in their city. Okay?
You're saying that a shoe that is not completed to that stage does not get worn?
Apparently. Right? Apparently they didn't wear shoes. Which, you know, sort of makes sense. Unless you're really in a bind, you're not going to wear, you know, you're going to wear your shoes which are, you know, polished and, you know, the soles aren't falling off.
So it wasn't as a kashash that when you send it to someone, they might come to polish it. That wasn't
right. It doesn't sound like that. It just sounds like it's not useful yet. That's what it sounds like. Okay. So just one small point. This is Tosfos in the parallel sugya mentions it. I gave the Ritva, because the Ritva just clarifies it. He had it in Tosas actually here, but the Ritva in general, just an intellectual history point, the Ritva has a tremendous amount of Tosafist material, more than any of his predecessors. The Ramban has very little Tosafist material, which he mostly gets not directly from France, but through Provence. Right? He gets material from the Provençals, and they in turn get material from Tosafist, so he has very limited Tosafist material. The Rajba as well has very limited Tosafist material. So between the Rajba and the Ritva, there was an influx of Tosafist material into Spain. He seems to have had in front of him Tosafist Rabbeinu Peretz, which is a very late compilation of Tosafist material, which itself is not a original Tosafist. It's meant as a summary Tosafos. So it has a tremendous amount of material in it, and the Ritva seems to have gotten that in front of him. So the Ritva in general has a lot more material from the French and German world than the Ramban or the Rashba. So Ritva quotes Rabbeinu Tam, the Hiksha Rabbeinu Tam. The implication here is the Hachamash Shederach Hakol in Om Minalim Shchorim. It sounds like everyone wore black shoes, right? Because there were the people who wore the black shoes, they just needed to shine them, and the people who wore the white shoes, who they needed to blacken. Right, so it sounds like the end color, right? Whether it's because of the natural blackness of the leather, the darkness of the leather, or it's because they colored it black on top of the white part of the leather. Either way, it sounds like they're wearing black shoes. V'ilu b'maseches tanis, but there's another Gemara, mashma d'lo v'regili bay. It implies that no one used to wear black. Now, black is normally a sign of
mourning.
Right, so the Gemara there, right, says El Chasidim Anshei Ma'aseh, that only righteous people wore black shoes. And the story it tells there is Ka'uvda de Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda once had a story, Dahu Gavra, there was a person, Dave Kai Bishuka, he was in the marketplace, V'ischaze le Eliyahu, Zachor Latov, and he saw Eliyahu. V'amar le, he said, Ika Inshe Bahai Shuka V'chule, is there anybody in this marketplace who's going to go into the world to come? So Achavi le Yahu Gavra, to see him, Misani Uchme, so he showed him this person, who had these black shoes on. So he asked him, why are you wearing these black shoes? So the fact that he asked him, why are you wearing these black shoes, right, implies that people didn't wear black. And yet here the Gemara is assuming that everyone wears black. And furthermore, there's a story where Elazar Ze'ire, the Chazu to see him Masani Uchme, he was wearing black shoes, and here it was assumed as a sign of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. The Amru Gabri Hirahu, and they said he's arrogant, he is not great enough to walk around with a sign of mourning on him all day. Only great people mourn the Beis HaMikdash every day of the year. The Chavshuhu, so they threw him in jail. Right? So we have here the Gemara in Tainis that just says that people didn't wear black. Right, that was something that made him stand out. And in Bava Kamma, it's even worse. You assume that black is a sign of mourning, and therefore only righteous people wear black to mourn the Beis HaMikdash. And yet here, the Gemara assumes that everyone is wearing some version of a black shoe. So Viterit, so he answered, Ki ahefresh bein chasidim l'shar bnei adam. So he said, no, the difference was Hayab biritsuot. No, everyone wore black shoes. The difference between righteous people and not righteous people wasn't the shoes, it was the straps. Kishal chasidim hayu shchoros, because the righteous people wore black straps to fully mourn, l'savo yushalayim, ushar kol adam levanot, and everyone else would wear black shoes with white shoelaces. The derech hagoyim, but non-Jews, hayu b'shchorot, would wear black on black, ulefichach, and now this is just the interesting part of it, is, right, this is sort of, you know, an interesting historical fact that they used to wear black shoes with white shoelaces. But what Tosafos picks up on is that what becomes clear, according to this analysis, is that for some reason, the way you identified people was by their
shoelaces.
And then he brings a proof,
right?
Which is Arkas Ademisane. Levir Amru Dafil Arkas Ademisane Harival Yavor. That the when the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that normally, what are the cardinal sins, right? Only Vodah Zarah, right? It's only the big three, right? Murder, idolatry, and immorality. But if it's Shas HaShmad, if it's a time when people are trying to root out Judaism, so the Gemara gives an example, Afilu Arkas HaDemesaneh, even if they tell you to wear a red shoelace, meaning wear a different color shoelace, the shoelace that the non-Jews wear, you have to give up your life. So Tosa says, well, once I know from the Gemara in Sanhedrin that it was, you know, a status thing, that people wore different shoelaces based on who they were, so, and it was so defining, such that, you know, in a time when they wanted to root out Judaism, what they would do is get you to change your shoelaces to the non-Jewish color. So you see that for some reason, right, that was the identifying identity badge in the time of the Gemara. So that's the case. He assumes that we can carry that over to answer this this contradiction, and say that the shoes were always black and the shoelaces were white. Again, the historical thing is interesting. This principle, though, that for some reason shoelaces were how people identified, while a little bit odd, seems to be borne out in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And then his second answer is simply v'yesh mitaretzim demekomos mekomos yesh. Some people just say that it depended where you lived. Some v'yesh shahayu kulam nogim lenomina levanim chutz mechasidim hashem maisa. Some people, everyone wore white shoes, except for righteous people wore black. He said the other alternative is that, yeah, Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi were describing their place where they live, but there could be yet another place, right? So he said, okay, so they lived in unique places, but really everyone wore whatever shoe they wore, and that was it. Okay, so that's just another small point on the shoe issue. Either there's something magical about shoelaces, or, right, this just doesn't tell you the whole story of what people wore. Okay.
More kids.
Kids are
white shoes and white shoelaces.
Right. I remember those. Yeah. Okay. So now let's see how much of this we get through. Okay. Zaklal kol shnei zmei yom tov. So now the last thing. Rav Sheshes sharlu l'rabbanan l'shaduri tefillin biyom atava. Rav Sheshes used to allow the rabbis to send tefillin on yom tov. Amar le'abaye. Abaye said to him, "How could you send tefillin?" But the principle of the Mishnah is that kol shnei osin bo biyom tov mishalchan oso, that anything that you use on Yom Tov, you send. And the rule is, we don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov. So he says, no. Hachi gamar, what it means is like this. Kol shnei osin bo bechol mishalchan oso biyom tov. Anything that you even use on chol, you're allowed to send on Yom Tov.
Right. Al's giving that look. Like, we don't wear tefillin on chol.
Chol. Not Chol HaMoed, Chol Chol.
No, generally Muksa, just because you can move it on Chol doesn't mean you can move it on Shabbos.
Yes, and we're going to see why that is. So the first question we're going to have to ask is
so
why...
In my case, are you allowed to move Tillin or not? No.
But whether you're allowed to...
Move Tillin or not.
Well, the Gemara is going to... That's what the Gemara is going to say here, is going to deal with when you're allowed to move it, right. As well as...
Tillin is Muksa on Shabbos, but aside from Tillin, I mean, what it's saying here is if you could move it on Chol, you could move it on Shabbos to Yantif. But that's not true of lots of things.
Yes, and we have to figure out why tefillin is unique.
Okay.
Right, Rashi says shumetukan kol sargo, right? Because it's a total kli. But yeah, I mean, on the mukta level, this is novel. And then the Gemara does, you know, one of its classics. Amar Abaye says tefillin. Well, since we're talking about tefillin, hol vasal yodan. Once we're talking about it, name of Milsa. So let's talk about it. Haya baba derech, if you're coming home at night, v'tfilin berosho, and you're wearing tefillin, v'shaka la v'chama, and the sun is setting, maniach yado aleim, atcha megia lebeso, put it on, you cover your tefillin with your hand until you get home. Hayosha beis hamedrash, if you're in the study hall, with tefillin berosho, and your tefillin's on, v'kiddush avayom, and it becomes Shabbos, maniach yado aleim, atcha megia lebeso, cover the tefillin with your hand until you get home. So Masa Rav Huna brei derav ika, haya baba derech, there's a brisa that says that if you're in this circumstance, right, where you're wearing your tefillin as it becomes sunset, you don't bring it all the way home. You just bring it to the border of the city, right, to the first house at the gate. Hayoshev beis hamedrash v'kiddush l'yom meniach yado aleim atchem again l'bayis hasamach beis hamedrash, and in the if you have it on when you're in the beis medrash, you bring it to the closest house. So the answer is lo kasha, it's not a question. Had mintera had lo mintera, if the tefillin will be protected if you leave it at that corner house, so leave it there. If it's not going to be protected, then bring it home. So the Gemara says, "Idlo mintera." If it's not going to be protected, Maya Barosho, it doesn't matter whether it's on your head. Afilu machdan baranami. Even if you find tefillin lying on the floor, if they're going to be destroyed, if you leave them there, you're allowed to take them in even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Datnan hamotzei tefillin machnisan zug. That if you find tefillin, you bring them in a pair at a time. You wear them. So where it says lo kasha, it's not a question. Ha demintra machmas ganve u machmas kalve. Ha demintra machmas kalve v'lo mintra machmas ganve. It depends whether what it's not guarded from. Right? If it's totally, totally protected, that we don't think it'll be stolen and we don't think the dogs will get to it, so then just leave it at the first house. If it's protected from dogs but not from thieves, so then right, meaning it's not fully protected, so then bring it home. And Mao Detema, I might have thought that Rov Listim Yisrael, most thieves are Jews, Velo Mazalzi Belohu, and therefore, I don't know. And therefore, even if they're stealing, they're not going to degrade the tefillin so it's safe, as long as it's saved from dogs, Kamash Malan, that no, Jewish thieves will degrade the tefillin, so unless it's protected, you have to take it somewhere. Okay, so that's the... so that's the Gemara. Now, there are a few issues that emerge here. And the main issue, really, is the status of tefillin on Yom Tov and the status of tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay?
So when he says, because it's getting dark, he's talking about getting dark, Erev Shabbos.
We'll see. That is a machlokas reshuffle. Yeah. Right? And that's going to be part of the discussion here. Okay, so let's see as much of it as we can get through. If not, we'll continue.
Shabbos and Yom Tov?
Well, no. Shabbos and Yom Tov are the same. Chol HaMoed might be different. And that's we'll get to that. Okay. Okay. So Rashi here says, Mishalchan Asob Yom Tov.
But, okay, in our case, just so I understand it, it's in a safe place now. You're sending it to someone else.
And in our Mishnah's case, you're sending it. Yes. Our Mishnah's case is in a safe place, and we're letting you send it even on Yom Tov. And then
and it's Rachana for Chol.
Well, that's the question. It sounds like it, yeah.
Okay.
It sounds like it's in preparation for a call. And right, your question is, you know, still very relevant, which is why should I do it? You know, it could be like the Rashba said, it's going to make someone happy, right? Tefillin are expensive, and that's enough.
Presumably apply to things like shofar and lulav, the same issue.
Yeah. So I mean, shofar and lulav, the reason we don't send it is because you might carry it versus harabim. But that's only a problem on Shabbos. Right? On Yom Tov, you're allowed to carry.
So that's what I'm asking, what the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov?
Oh, yeah, meaning on Shabbos, right, I mean you can't...
You would have to put it on, that's why you zip.
Right, you put it on.
More on Shabbos than Yom Tov.
Yeah, you know, in the Shabbos one, you put it on, right? You put it on so that you're not carrying it, right? If you put it on, so you're wearing it. That's not totally clear. I mean, if you want to just skip for a moment to the last source I put, which is one more hara, which is why does it help to wear it? So Rashi says that the reason is because it's ha'avara klachar yad u'mishum bizayah, that it's considered carrying it in a weird way. And Rav Elchanan, right, asked the last source, right, in source four in the section four, hiksha gon Rav Elchanan Wasserman zaltzal. Why did Rashi say that the reason you're allowed to put it on, you know, is because it's considered klachayad? It's considered carrying it in a weird way, and therefore it's only asur midrabanan. Why didn't he just say kevin have a malbush? Umalbush mutar lahachnis leir. Why didn't he just say that it's wearing, right? Meaning, if you wear something that's not considered carrying, it's mutar lechatchila, even rabbinically. Rashi said that since you're wearing it, it's considered carrying it in a weird way, so it's only usher rabbinically, and if the tefillin won't be protected, so then it's mutar to carry it. So Rav Elchanan says, why do you need that? Just say that when you wear tefillin, you're wearing it, and if it's clothing, so then it's, right, then it's not muktzah to begin with, right? And it's not carrying to begin with, rather. Afilu shol klachar yad. So he just answers, no. Avamit ish machloket, tefillin evi malbush, ilo. Right, there's a machlokas, right? And Rashi is weighing in. It's not clear that wearing tefillin, or definitely wearing tefillin on Shabbos, or on Chayiv, is considered wearing, right? Or is ritual wearing not called wearing? If you think that ritual wearing is called wearing, so then, yeah, the reason that you're allowed to put it on by wearing it is because then it's not carrying at all. If you think that ritual wearing doesn't count as clothing, so then the reason you're allowed to put it on is because the normal way to carry it is in your hands. So if you carry it by putting it on, so then, that's klachar yad. It's only rabbinically forbidden. Once it's rabbinically forbidden, the chazal waive it in order to protect the tefillin. Okay, so that's just one more small point. Now to try to deal with the main issue here. So we have a machlokes here, Rashi and the Hagos Ashri. Rashi says as follows: Mishal Chanoso biyomtov. You send it to on the yomtov. D biyomtov di katani mishnah lav aneosin dil kamei koi. Ella mishalchen de basrei. Right, this idea that you know that you get benefit that you're allowed to send it is going on the second case of sending it. Dinami marachlu biyomtov leka yisura. So now Rashi addresses your question, which is why is it mutter to wear it on? Is it mutter to send on Yom Tov? Because it's not usher to wear it on Yom Tov if you want. There's no obligation, but it's not usher. So let's say you wanted to put on tefillin, you could. And the second you could, it's not useless. Umihu, sandal mezumar, as opposed to the shoe, lo, delo lema mi deshara rabbanim l'shalcho, shmaminam butl nalo. So Rashi solves the problem very simply, and he says, look, given, normally you wear tefillin on the weekday, but you're not allowed to wear it on Yom Tov. You can, and once you can, so it has a use. Yes. Okay.
So, but in terms of carrying, let's say on Shabbos, I'm just saying Shabbos. Are you allowed to put it on for the same reason?
So, according to Rashi, it would sound like you can. According to Rashi,
the question is: does he hold? If he doesn't hold that it's a malbush, right? It's okay, achiyad. Then maybe you're not allowed to do that.
Right. That so it could be. Right. It could be that he would have some
same thing with shofar and lulav. Same problem.
Right. So it could be as a middle position. Right. That ritual wearing is not wearing, and therefore, on Shabbos when there's an isser of carrying, you wouldn't be allowed to carry it. On Yom Tov, there's no isser of carrying. All you need to do is justify usage. Right. And since you're allowed to put it on, right, it could be that Rashi, right, if we combine the two Rashis, would have that middle position.
Right.
He doesn't spell it out that clearly, but at any rate, to solve the problem here, Rashi says that the reason that it's not usher to send on Yom Tov is because it's mutter to put it on Yom Tov. The Hagos Ashri says v'kasha halitzorach hamoy ketani b'masnizin. Right, he asks the same question explicitly. He says, why are you allowed to send tefillin? It says l'tzorach hamoy, you're allowed to send things. U'tefillin lav l'tzorach hamoy klal ninhu, you don't use it at all on Yom Tov. Elahachi perusha, this is what it means. Kol shneosin menu b'chol. The Hainu, B'chol HaMoed. No, it is. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is Chol doesn't mean the weekday, it means Chol HaMoed. And what it's teaching you is that since you're allowed to use it tomorrow, during Chol HaMoed, so it already has a somewhat of a use on Yom Tov. Also, L'suviyeh Tfilin Sh'neosim Chol HaMoed. Well, L'tzorach HaMoed Dikatani. So what does it mean, L'tzorach HaMoed? It doesn't mean L'tzorach Yom Tov. It means Hainu L'tzorach Chol Shalmoed. It means, right now, this is a big Kiddush in general. The notion that you're allowed to prepare on Yom Tov for Chol HaMoed is not obvious at all. Right, Rabbi Kivi Eger even says, right, it's so obvious that it's usher to prepare from Yom Tov to Chol HaMoed that he thinks it's usher to prepare from first day of Yom Tov to second day of Yom Tov, which biblically is only Chol HaMoed, right? So this is not obvious. This is actually a big chiddush to say that all of Yom Tov is united, that you're actually allowed to prepare from Yom Tov to Chol HaMoed. But he solves the how is it L'tzorach HaMoed question by saying that it's L'tzorach Chol HaMoed, and then he says the right Umikan Raya, and what is this proof? Shetzar Glilbosh Tefillin B'Chol HaMoed. This is his proof that you wear Tefillin B'Chol HaMoed, which, as we know, is a big dispute, which we will try to get into. So, Mishalchen kol minei takshitin biyom tov. So we have, right, so Rashi and Hagos Ashri both address the same problem, which is, if the principle of the Mishnah is that you're only allowed to send things on Yom Tov that are needed on Yom Tov, then why are you allowed to send tefillin? So each comes up with a different answer. Rashi says, because you may not have to wear it on Yom Tov, but you're allowed to, so it's considered usable on Yom Tov. The Hagos Ashri says, no, it's not at all used on Yom Tov, right? And we'll see why he assumes that. So it must be this for Chol HaMoed. In order to do this, he has to be mechadesh two things. One is that we wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. And two is that something is considered necessary on Yom Tov if you need it not for Yom Tov, but for Chol HaMoed. Both of those are subject to dispute.
So that way you could cook on Yom Tov for Chol
HaMoed. Right, so that's what I wonder, whether the Hagos Ashri thinks that. I don't know, because the Hagos Ashri, by definition, is just a series of comments, right, by the father of the Trumas Hadeshah that he added to the Rush, so we don't have a systematic commentary by him. But I wonder, right, whether he would think that you can even cook, or if he has lower standards for for justifying, you know,
Hotza'a
or something.
So some way it holds maybe that Chol HaMoed, even though you're allowed to put on tefillin Chol HaMoed, it still has a higher kedusha than you would think.
Right. I mean,
in other words, that it's almost equivalent to Yom Tov, but not quite equivalent.
Exactly. Right. I mean, that's what you would have to come at, is you wear tefillin because it's not really Yom Tov,
right.
But it's enough connected to Yom Tov that it will justify Tzorech Yom Tov for Chol HaMoed. Right. The Hagos Ashrei is going to have to sort of try to... I would be fascinated by it. Again, I wish we had a systematic commentary by the Hagos Ashrei, but we don't. So I don't know whether he thinks you're allowed to cook from Yom Tov to Chol HaMoed. That would be a very, very surprising kiddush. But it's, I guess it's possible. So this notion, though, is there an Isser or not to wear tefillin on Yom Tov, is not originally Machlokas Rashi and the Hagos Ashrei, it's Machlokas and the Gemara. And they're all drawing on this Gemara here in Menachos. So the Gemara in Menachos is as follows. So mi amar Rava bar Huna hachi. I think at the rate we're going, what we're going to have to do is do Tulan and Yom Tov, and maybe we'll devote a whole shir to Tulan and Chol HaMoed, which is really a topic in of itself, next week. Rava bar Huna hachi. Amar Rava bar Huna savek hashecha savek lo hashecha. You're not sure whether it's nightfall, right? It's night yet. Lo cholech v'lo meniach. So don't take off Tulan, but don't put them on. But if it's nightfall, cholates, you have to take it off. So the Gemara says, no. Hasan Berav Shabbos Itmar. Right? The Gemara is trying to figure out, is there a prohibition of wearing tefillin at night? So first the Gemara says, oh, you see that you have to take it off at night? No, maybe that's Shabbos. So the Gemara says, my kesavar, what does he hold? E kesavar, Laila's man tefillin, Shabbos Nami's man tefillin. He said, these are connected positions. Either you think that night and Shabbos are both times when you're supposed to have tefillin on, Ikasavar Shabbos loves Montefillin, and if you think you don't put on Tefillin on Shabbos, not Lila Nami loves Montefillin, so you also shouldn't put on at night. And why would you connect them? Because the source to exclude Shabbos from a time when you put on Tefillin is the same source from which you exclude nighttime. Did Tanya? Because the Brisa says, Vishamarta Zachukazos, and Moadam Yamim Yamima. Right, you shall guard this law, right? In its proper time forever. Yamim, we derive yamim v'lo leilo, days and not nights. Mi yamim v'lo kol yamim. Some, right, from the mem, from some days, so we learn some days and not all days. Prat l'shabbatot v'yamim tovim, divrei Rabbi Yosi HaGlili. So you see that if you think that you don't wear tefillin at night, you don't wear it on Shabbos. Those are connected. And Rabbi Kiva omer, lo nemar chukas zu elo l'pesach v'vad. No, this pasuk is only talking about Pesach. So how could you split the position and say that night is a time when you wear tefillin and Shabbos isn't? So the Gemara says, no, nafkale mehecha nafkale Rabbi Kiva. No, there's a different pasuk that Rabbi Kiva used. Titanya Rabbi Kiva omer, yochol yiniach adam tefillin b'shabbos v'yom tovem. I would have thought you can wear tefillin and Shabbos in Yom Tov. Tamad lomar, v'haya le'os al yodecha le'totavos b'yinecha. When you put it as a sign on your hand and as whatever totafot means, right, between your eyes, which tells you that mishet shrichin os, you only wear tefillin on a day that needs a sign. Yatzu Shabbos v'yomim tovim shein gufan os, which excludes Shabbos and Yom Tov, which themselves are a sign. So Amar Rebbe Lazar, says, kol meniach tefillin achar shkiyas hachama. Anyone who puts on tefillin after nightfall, it's not just not obligated, over basay, he nullifies this positive mitzvah of chukah, right? You're supposed to put it on at this time, so if you put it on a different time, you're nullifying the positive mitzvah to put it on at the right time. Yochanan Amar, Yochanan says not only that, it's not only a nullification of a positive mitzvah, over balav. You violate a prohibition. So then the Gemara says that their machlokes is based on when you have a hishamer, right, or any root of shin mem resh, which always indicates a lav. If it's a hishamer, which is attached to a positive mitzvah, does that translate into a positive mitzvah or a negative one? So that's the next three lines. And then if you just skip to the end, but the three lines from the bottom, Amar Rabbi Lazar, v'im l'shamron, if you're just putting on to protect the tefillin, mutter, and that's what we saw in our Gemara, that we were just, right, that the Gemara allowed you to put it on, zug, to protect it on Shabbos, right, it's only usher to put it on l'shem mitzvah on Shabbos or Yom Tov, Amar Ravina, and Ravina said that, yasivna kameh de Rav Ashi, v'chashav v'niach tefillin, that I was buyer of Ashi and it became night and he put on tefillin. And I said, why are you wearing it? Is it to protect them? I'm really in. I said, yeah, I'm putting on at night to protect it. The chazise diladaite lav l'shamanhu bai. But then I saw that he was wearing it when he didn't need to protect it. So the Gemara says, kasavar halacha bein morin kain. So he thought, in the end of the day, Rav Ashi thought that really Laila zman tefillin he, but we don't tell that publicly. So he lied and he said, I was doing it to protect it, but really he paskin that tefillin you wear at night. So what emerges from the Gemara is two or three positions.
But if he says that you wear it at night, is he saying that you also wear it on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Because they connected everything.
So that seems not in the end, because the Gemara splits. Well, the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yossi, yes, according to Rabbi Kiva, no. The Rabbi Kiva splits night and Yom Tov and Shabbos, and Rabbi Yossi connects them. So, right, Rabbi Yossi would say, yes, if you think you wear it at night, you wear it on Shabbos. And if you wear, and according to Rabbi Kiva, you could split them and say you could wear it at night, but not on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So you end up having three positions in the Gemara, right? Even within the prohibition, even if you think you don't have to wear tefillin on Shabbos, Yom Tov, or at night, so you don't have to, but there's no iser, or you don't have to, and you even violate a nasei, or you don't have to, and you violate a lav. And then in terms of how we paskin, so you have people who paskin positively in each direction, either you should wear it or you shouldn't wear it. And then you have this middle position, a Rav Ashi, which is really, at night you can and should. It's a mitzvah to wear tefillin, but we don't tell people that. Now why wouldn't we tell people that? So Rashi says, Tzavar halacha delayla zman tefillin hu, ve'im morin kain, Shema yishkachem v'yashen bahen. Because derabanan, we don't want you to wear it, because if you wear it at night, you might fall asleep with them, and that's usher. Because the amar lei l'shamran kabaina, and right, he hid what he was saying by saying he needed to protect it because he didn't want to paskin this publicly, right? So even though biblically you can and should wear them at night, rabbinically we say don't, because you might fall asleep, right? Similar to the way nowadays, really, the mitzvah of tefillin is all day. We don't wear it all day because, right, we can't concentrate, we can't keep our bodies clean enough, right, all the reasons that are given, right? So apparently, Rav Ashi had some, version of this where he thought that really you should wear it day and night, but we can't tell the average person that because they'll end up sleeping and that you can't, in the tefillin, that you can't do. Now, historically, it's interesting that this concern that we can't protect tefillin sufficiently led to there being entire periods where no one wore tefillin. There's a tshuva in the Mari Bruna where he just testifies the fact that no one wore tefillin, and he asked, is it yuara, right? Is it religious presumptuousness to wear tefillin? He says, no, you're supposed to wear tefillin, right? This is just a mistake. But this obsession that we have sometimes goes to extremes, and there was this period in the time of the Mari Bruna where no one wore tefillin.
I thought I once saw Rabbeinu Yonah, who said that you see that mitzvahs need mazel. And tefillin was one mitzvah that had no mazel, because nobody wore it then.
It could be. I wouldn't be surprised if it was true in his time also. I wasn't aware of this rabbinia.
Yeah, I think I heard it somewhere. Maybe I'm wrong.
It could be true in the time of the Mari Bruna.
You have to have a mazel.
Yeah, I'll take a look for it. I mean, in the time of the Mari Bruna, we know it is true, so it could very well be true. It's true in the time of Rabbeinu Yonah as well.
I mean, David told me that during the time of the Reef, he actually wrote letters asking people to start putting on tefillin and to make it a custom.
Interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this was a period, over a course of several centuries.
People wear tefillin. No, period. Not all day, just period.
They didn't wear tefillin. So they weren't even wearing empty duffel.
Right.
No. Okay. So with this Gemara, right, so what we see is that Rashi took the position in his conclusion that even, right, that there is no obligation, right, but he doesn't paskin like the latter deos that you violate an asay or a lav. Right. And therefore he says, right, he paskins that you don't wear it on Yom Tov, but he paskins against the two later positions in the Gemara.
He's saying it is a mitzvah. He says, kesavar halacha delayla zman tefillin hu.
Right, so Rashi here is explaining that halacha, the shita. Rav Ashi thinks it's a mitzvah at night. Right. I should have been clear. Rashi in Beitza, who says that there's no mitzvah but there's no prohibition, is ruling like the earlier positions, right? That it's we paskin like either Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Yossi HaGlili that you don't wear it on Yom Tov, but he doesn't paskin like Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Yochanan that it's usher to. And therefore, since he thinks you don't have to, but you can, which is not a mitzvah, so then he says, so if that's the case, then it is not muksa. The Hagos HaShri, right, isn't willing to accept this, presumably because most Rishonim assumed that it wasn't, that we paskin like the latter deos, that it's not just not obligatory, but it's actually forbidden to wear tefillin on Yom Tov. And Shulchan Aruch paskin this way based on the Rambam, right, b'Shabbos v'Yom Tov asur lahaniach tefillin v'pnei shehem atzmam os v'im manichin behem os acher hevei hayazilzul la'os shalahem. It's actually prohibited. And now he explains, why would it be prohibited? So, right, so now going back to our Gemara, right, when the Gemara, in the Gemara Menachos, when the Gemara says the reason that you don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov is because Shabbos and Yom Tov are themselves, right, an oath, they're, right, a sign of our covenant. Okay. So there's two ways of reading that, right? What Shulchan Aruch is emphasizing is that one way is saying you don't need it. The other one is saying, right, you're implying that you do, and that's a problem, right? That's usher, right? So Rashi paskins like the first day, says there's no isser, which implies that when it, what it means when it says Shabbos and Yom Tov are an oath and therefore don't need another oath, it just means they don't need it. You could put it on if you want, but you don't need it. The later positions, the way Shulchan Aruch seems to understand them, is no, is that Shabbos and Yom Tov are themselves signs of the relationship between us and God, and therefore if you put on tefillin and you imply that this is insufficient, you're degrading, you're humiliating Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that's why there's the two positions in the Gemara that it's not just not obligatory, but it's actually forbidden either through a positive or negative commandment. So then plugging it back into our Gemara, right, it explains them. Right, at least this aspect of the Machlokas Rashi and Hagos HaShri, that Rashi thinks that it's only not obligatory, and therefore I can, in normal Muksa terms, can explain why it's permitted. The Hagos HaShri says no, it's actually prohibited, and therefore he has to come up with a novel position that even though it's usher to wear on Yom Tov is allowed to prepare for Chol HaMoed. In this, at least in this limited sense, and therefore it is mutter to send tefillin on Yom Tov because it's a legitimate preparation for Chol HaMoed. The Tosfos quotes from Menu Tam, an even more extreme position, that not only is it a lav or an asay to wear tefillin on Shabbos or Yom Tov, but Rabbeinu Tam actually says, Remefarish Rabbeinu Tam, let's start from the beginning. Beperek Basiman and Nida, it says, Besof Ketim Avarchin, Tamrina Minimarava, Mavarche Basar de Besalke Tfilahu, Lishmar Chukav. Right? The Gemara says there were some who used to make a bracha when they took their tefillin off. So Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam said, when would you make a bracha when you take it off? No one makes a bracha when they take off their talis. The bracha only makes sense by tefillin dafka. Because there's mitzvah of chukah. And what does that mean? If you take it off right before nightfall, because we say that you can't wear it at night, so if you can't wear it, you must take it off. And therefore, you don't just take it off. You make a bracha. Which Rabbeinu Tam says that position, that you violate a nasei or even a lav, if you wear it at night, is even more than that. Because you violate a lav, it's a mitzvah to take off the tefillin before nightfall. Right? To actively show, right, I wear it when it is meaningful, when it is a chiyuv. And I take it off in order that I'm not wearing it at the wrong time. And therefore it's not just that there's a iser to have it then, it's a mitzvah to take it off at the correct time. Right? So what we have so far is we have in the Gemara itself, we have the range, the people who think that maybe there's a mitzvah that you actually have a mitzvah on Shabbos and Yom Tov and at night. The people who think that there's not a mitzvah in any of them, the possibility to split between Shabbos and Yom Tov at night, because at night maybe you wear it because there's no counter pressure, and Shabbos and Yom Tov there is the counter pressure of Os. Then the next question in the Gemara is it a violation of a positive or even a negative commandment to wear it in the improper time? Rashi rules like the last position in the Gemara was halacha vein morin kein, that really it's a mitzvah to wear it at night, but rabbinically we tell you not to, so we don't tell the public that you should wear it at night. Rashi in Beitza rules like the position that it's not a chiyuv, but it's not usher to wear it on Yom Tov, and therefore it's considered sorech Yom Tov. Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, Paskin, is in fact forbidden to wear it. Rabbi Natan goes farther, not only is it forbidden, but since it's forbidden to wear it, taking it off is an expression of the mitzvah of wearing tefillin at the right time, so you even make a bracha of Shomer Chukav. Since Rov Rishonim Paskin like this, right, maybe not the extreme of Rabbi Natan, but that it's a mitzvah to take them off, or it's usher to keep them on, so then you have the Hagos Hashri, who says, well, if that's the case, and you can't explain the reason you're allowed to send tefillin on Yom Tov is because it is, at some level, necessary for Yom Tov, or useful on Yom Tov. It must be that we're Mechadesh, that you're allowed to wear, that you're allowed to prepare for Chol HaMoed, and you have to assume that you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So I think we're out of time, so we'll hold there. And next time, we'll finish Yom Tov and do Chol HaMoed, which really does deserve its own share, so that's better. And I feel better that we covered the small points.
But there were those in the Middle Ages who did wear tefillin at night, did wear tefillin on Shabbos as well.
Could be.
See the Ashkenaz.
Could be, yeah. I mean, Chassidei Ashkenaz did a lot of interesting things.
Does that mean Rabbeinu Tam held that you had to wear the tefillin all day? Because he had a breath at the end?
No, he says, if you take it off, right, if you take it off at nightfall, meaning if you take it off earlier, then that's not an expression of protecting tefillin. But if you take it off only when it's time to take them off, then you say a bracha. So just to summarize what we saw, okay, I think it was probably worth it to see the small points. This way we have a complete picture of the daf. So we did Sandal HaMasumar. We made 3 points on it, which built on each other. One is that the reason it's only lower level Mokta is because it's useful at some level. Because it's useful at some level, the Rajma says you're allowed to send it because it'll make someone happy. And the reason that it's even a Chiddush is because I might have thought that it's not even Mokta because it's only a Gzera Derabbanan that made it us or Kamash Malan, that's enough to make it at least Mokta. Then we saw the issue of the colored shoes, where, again, the interesting point is that Tosfos claims, based on the Arkas de Masani Gemara, that shoelaces were identifying, and therefore the Gemara, right, also in terms of mourning, would say that people would wear white or black shoelaces, even if everyone wore black shoes. And then we started the sugya of Tulan on Yom Tov and Cholom, of Yom Tov, and on Shabbos, we saw the multiple positions in the Gemara, in terms, do you wear Tulan at night, during on Yom Tov, on Shabbos? And then the middle position that really you should wear it at night, but we don't tell people that. Even if you think that you don't wear it at Yom Tov and Shabbos at night, is it usher, either Basay or Lav? Rashi rules in Beitza that it's only not obligatory but not forbidden, and therefore says that that's why it's useful on Yom Tov, you're allowed to send it. And then Gosh Hashri, Paskin's like Rov Rishonim, that it's in fact forbidden. If it's forbidden, he has to come up with a novelty that the reason, therefore, you can send it is because of the Tzara Chol HaMoed. It needs to be Mechadesh two things. One is that you wear Tzara Chol HaMoed, and two is that it is considered Tzara Chol HaMoed, even if it's preparation for Chol HaMoed and not for Yom Tov itself. And the reason we would say that it's an Isser or a mitzvah to take off tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov is because you're degrading the oaths of Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that's how it's expressed in Shulchan Aruch. And then we saw the extreme expression of Rabbeinu Tam is that not only is it usher to have your tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov and at night, but if you take it off just in time to show that you're doing it because of the mitzvah, that you even make a bracha because it's a kiyum, it's a fulfillment of the chiyuv to wear tefillin at the right time. We'll pick up next week, we'll continue Shabbos Yom Tov, do Chol HaMoed, and since we'll have more time, we'll talk about some of the issues that come up in tefillin and Chol HaMoed, which isn't just the local halacha, but it's also one of the central sugya where we see the machlokes about what influence Kabbalah should have on Psak. Because the Beis Yosef explicitly bases his position on the Zohar. So since we have extra time, because we're spreading it over 2 weeks, we'll spend some time talking about that issue, which I think is a fascinating issue.